Good afternoon. It is 3 o'clock, and 3 o'clock is special guest time. And I'm very happy to welcome into the studio Karen Noble, who is a Dusty Springfield and a Barbra Streisand tribute act. And she has performed with some of the biggest names. And I am a little starstruck, but it's great to have her in the studio. Hello. Hello, Karen. How are you?
Good afternoon, Rim. I'm very good. Thank
good,
you.
Good, good. Now, let's go right back, because, like I said, you're only 30 years old. So we're going to go back to the start of your career. You were on Junior Showtime and Songs of Praise as a child, and you've been in the music industry all your life. Now, first of all, how did you get into the music industry?
I was very lucky, and I've got to be fair, my parents gave me the opportunity. You know, I think a lot of people, when they have their children or whatever, they like to give their children opportunities. Sometimes it's a 5-minute wonder, and other times it's not. I've got a brother and sister. I chose to go the music direction. My brother and sister didn't, but I had guitar lessons, I had dance lessons, I had flute lessons, piano lessons, singing lessons.
Wow.
And it's just, they gave me the opportunity to carry it on, you know, and then the work was down to me to...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
To move it on.
I mean, you must have shown talent, because you're a concert, you've been a concert pianist, an opera singer, session singer, and a pop singer. I mean... All of that, that's incredible.
The way it started was I had all these lessons and things, and when I was in junior school, the headmaster called my parents in and said, because I always used to get the lead roles in whatever we were doing, the concerts at school, and they called them in and said, I think you should take her for singing lessons because she's got potential. So I have to thank my headmaster from, you know, a million years ago.
Isn't that good?
And so I did. I had singing lessons, and then I worked really hard and went into, and then I got scholarship to go to music college, and that's where I studied piano again. I'm a concert pianist, and guitar. Classical guitar and singing, but you kind of have to make a first choice, so I chose singing as my first choice. Being a concert pianist is so competitive, so competitive, and I couldn't delegate the time to really, you know, have my chops really good. I did do concertos and things like that, but it had to be the singing that took over, and that was doing the opera and things
opera,
like that.
To go to be an opera singer as well as like a pop singer, I didn't actually think that that is like very transferable.
Well, it did. To start off with, it was very much classical singing that I did. I did all oratorios and operas and things like that. So that was my beginning. And then I got involved in a band at music college, and we used to do a bit of TV, and it started doing sort of pop stuff, you know. And I got the taste for it. The opera singing, I'm giving my age away now, but it was very different in the day, because you had to sing over an orchestra. Now the sound systems are phenomenal. You don't need that power, you know. And being very vain, I didn't want to put loads of weight on to sing over a Wagner orchestra, you know, to do a Wagner opera. So I decided I wanted to change my way of thinking. But, of course, the grounding at music college was absolutely fantastic. That's why I can still sing now, and I've still got the same range. Because I had the proper training, it really taught me loads and loads. And I was really dedicated in, you know, making sure that I did look after my voice. Don't get me wrong, I've play hard as well, but you know, it was just something that I wanted to develop. But because of that, I was could sight read music, and so I was a session musician singer as well. So that's how I got into doing the session work, and I ended up doing an album with an Al Jolson tribute from Canada. I did that, and then got into I did the Heart of the Sky album with Spandau Ballet.
You can't just skip over just with Spandau Ballet. Tell us about your time with them.
Well, that was by default, really. I just got asked because somebody else couldn't do it, but I was, because I could sight read, I could go in and just go in and read. So it was just doing the backing vocals for the album, which was a flop, actually. I believe it wasn't, it was their last kind of one before you know. But I loved it. The music is just fantastic.
And what were they like?
Lovely, lovely. I mean, I know Tony Hadley quite well because I've since worked with him, so has my husband. And so, you know, he's great. He's absolutely great. Unfortunately, they are split up and things,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just great music. Yeah. Just fantastic. Yeah, no. The 80s music is just...
Oh,
love,
I must admit, I'm very much... I gravitate to 80s as well. I do like a lot of the new stuff as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I like Dua Lipa. I like... Yeah. Lola Young, is it the one that sings Messy?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I do... I want to keep up with new music, but my guilty pleasure in my heart is always the 80s.
Yeah, I've got to say the same, really. You know, haven't done Dusty and Streisand and stuff like that, but the 80s was a fantastic era because, for me, it was before the 80s, we had the old vinyl and stuff,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And they had all, like, the Sound-alike records that used to have, the KTEL. Do you remember those records?
Oh, go on, tell
records.
Us.
It's like Sound-alikes. In the 80s, it was a money-making machine for me because being a session singer, I used to do Sound-alikes of everybody.
Oh, yes, I do know.
They used to be like snide CDs that would be sold all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Celine Dion had a new album out. I'd rub my hands together because I'd do covers of all of them and they'd be all over the world. Japan, you name
wow,
it, everywhere.
That's
and we
incredible.
Had gold discs for it, you know. It's all that at that time, you could do all those things. It's far more policed now, you know,
stuff like that.
But the opportunity to do all those great songs and cover all those songs is it's fantastic.
You just touched on, like, how things have changed. How much, because we're going to talk about you touring now, but how much would you say that things have changed in the music industry in, say, the last 40 years, would it be? 30 years?
Yeah, I think it's changed massively. I mean, I used to, in my prime, you know, when I was sort of, you know, 20, 30, 40, there was so much to do. I mean, I've spent my time entertaining the troops, going to the Falklands, Belize and all that sort of stuff, because the reason we went out there was to boost morale.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there was no form of... I mean, I used to go there with my dancers to, I don't know, Bosnia or something like that, and the lads and lasses there only had a 10-minute phone call a week to their loved ones. There was no internet. There was nothing. So there was a purpose for us to go. I mean, we also stay in the same accommodation that the lads and lasses did as well, you know. But there was a purpose. But now with the internet, it's kind of wiped out a lot of things, you know.
It's not so much live, I guess.
No, it's
because
not.
They can just press a button and it's there.
Yeah, even things like in the West End used to have, you know, full orchestras. Now they have, and I'm guilty of this as well, because you've had to cut down the number of in the band because of finances, you know, it's not affordable. So they have, like, click tracks, you know, so it'll be part recorded and then it'll be on a metronome counting in, and live bit would add to the click track,
right,
if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So the click track might have backing vocals and stuff and maybe a few strings and, you know.
It's kind of... It's a bit of the magic lost, I think.
Yeah, I think so,
yeah.
Live, you know, I'm so pro-live.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is the whole thing, really, is that, you know, I really beg people to go and support live music.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it will be a dying trade. And I think there's so much talent around that it's so unfortunate that they don't have the opportunities that I had, you know. There was, I just used to work 365 days a year, you know.
Wow.
You know, Christmas Day, I wouldn't think twice about not working, you know. I used to do 5 shows a night, you know, on some occasions.
Incredible.
The opportunities were there,
but
it's not the same, you know, so...
But you have to be, obviously, you have to be good. When you're saying that you did 365, if you weren't any good, you wouldn't be getting those gigs.
Well, you know, sometimes you're in the right place at the right time.
Okay, there's, yes.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah.
But, of course, then you have to prove yourself, don't you?
Absolutely. Whatever... time, whatever place.
Yeah.
What do you think, because the opportunity, obviously you had a lot of opportunities, but now what do you think of things like X Factor and Pop Idol and those sort of programs?
I understand why they do them.
Mm.
I'm not a particular fan. The only trouble is that you get these people that... Because I think everybody's got a party piece in them.
Yeah.
Everybody, yeah. You know. But it's actually putting on a show. And, you know, and learning the music and the songs or whatever. That's all part of it, you know. So they might have a wonderful voice and can sing three songs. But actually to sing for an hour or, you know, be punchy numbers, and it's a different bag, I think, really.
Do you think also, like, they raise expectations, these sort of shows? And
And
people fall down heavy
hard. Well, you still had that pressure in my day. You know, you've got to be slim, you've got to be, you know. And, you know, all the dancers had to look exactly the same, and, you know, there's all that kind of pressure put on. But it's kind of different now, you know. They're kind of, instead of giving people the right opportunities, then they lean on them, don't they? And they've got to have a story or something. Whereas, you know, there are some people you think, well, they might not have a story, but they're booming good. You know, they're really good. Give them an opportunity. It's sometimes I think the onus is put too much on that.
You know? What about... going to be a little bit controversial, you know, in the theatre or in the acting world, they have like the casting couch. Do you think that there's the equivalent of that in the music industry?
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, absolutely. Not mentioning anybody in names, but no, there are,
because a lot has come out since, like, I don't know, the 60s, 70s. I mean, I remember not long ago seeing a programme about the Bay City Rollers and how they were really, you know, abused, really, by their managers or people in the music industry itself, like radio DJs and stuff.
Yeah. The trouble is, Rumour, is the thing is, back in the day, you're talking, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s even, it was a man's world, and showbiz. It was definitely a man's world. All the managers were... with the odd exception, were men. You know, all the big comedian stars, pretty much 90% of them were men, you know, and they had this power. They were earning an awful lot of money, and some of it went to their heads. And sometimes they were just naughty, you know. You have to be, I think you have to be strong. I mean, I gain the respect of a lot of comedians because I just stood up for myself. Whereas I think some people may be starstruck, and it was peer pressure, you know. So you can't, this might sound controversial, but you can't exactly blame some of the men, if you want to put it that way, that were naughty. Because they were allowed to be.
No, that's that is another thing, that they were kind of... it was an unwritten rule, I suppose, that they could do whatever they wanted... and then it was down to the act, the female, whoever, to sort of put the boundaries down,
But, it was a man's world. Now it's far more equal.
That's good.
That is good.
Okay,
news.
Now you have worked with some amazing people like Robin Williams, Gene Pitney, Billy Connolly, Shirley Bassey, Lenny Henry, Jim Davison, Freddie Starr, and it says here many more. I mean, were you singing with them all each time?
Yeah. I mean, the Robin Williams thing was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I was on doing a Christmas season at Blazers in Windsor with Lenny Henry, and I've got a lot to thank Lenny Henry for, because he actually spread the word about me, and I ended up working all the time at Blazers. But one of his best friends was Robin Williams, the comedian, obviously, not Robbie. He came to visit Lenny. Lenny was with Dawn French at the time, and Dawn French was wonderful. She's so funny, isn't she? I love her. She wouldn't suffer fools gladly, though. If anybody tried to, you know, muscle in or something, they weren't supposed to be there. She did nonsense. But and Lenny was very generous. I mean, sometimes people haven't got a good word to say for Lenny. Maybe he's changed. I haven't seen him for many years now. But he was very, very generous to me and very kind. And when Robin Williams came along, Lenny did his show. And then he said, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine, to the audience. And Robin Williams went on and did an hour. And he was wonderful. I was on the bill with Robin Williams as well as Lenny.
That man, genius. Very sad story, but he was genius.
He was.
He really was.
Incredible.
Also, tell us about how Jim Davidson helped you along the way.
Well, again, I did a Christmas season at Blazers with Jim Davidson, and from there he asked me to do his summer season. That's when I met my husband, because Dave, my husband, was sound engineer and ran Jim Davidson's sound company. And so Jim was, for many, many years, I've toured with him and worked with him, and he was the one that instigated the Dusty Springfield whole thing as well.
Tell us, did he hear you sing a Dusty song and then think...
It was really strange because I was in the studio doing some studio work with a friend of mine, and they'd heard that Ray Cooney, who was a big director in London, was looking for somebody to play Dusty Springfield. And this was before she passed away. And I didn't really know who she was because coming from an opera background and then doing all the other stuff, she was kind of 60s and I didn't know too much. The only song I knew was You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, I applied for this job as playing Dusty to Ray Cooney, and I got a handwritten letter back from Ray Cooney saying, you've got the gig, but we've got some legalities we've got to go through, which we had legalities to deal with as well when we did at the Dusty show. Very tight. There's lots of issues to go through with Dusty, books written that just shouldn't have been written, and, you know, there was lots of controversy about Dusty. I told Jim, I said, I've just been offered the role, but I don't know if it's going to happen, you know. So he obviously kept it in the back of his mind, and then it didn't happen. And about a couple of years later, we were out in Macedonia entertaining the troops, Jim and I, along with my husband was there doing the sound and everything else. And Dusty had just passed away, and he said, how do you fancy playing Dusty? I'll put the show on for you. I'll finance it, put it all together.
Jim Davidson. Wow.
Yeah. So I said, well, yeah, I'd love to, but I've really got to study her. I mean, because Dusty's a massive gay icon. You can't get it wrong. You cannot get it wrong. So I wanted to know everything about her, and I know a lot about her now. I've been mentioned in lots of her biographies and stuff like that, autobiographies rather. And she was a very complex character, but wonderful singer and wonderful songs. The songs are incredible, you know. So I spent 9 months studying Dusty.
Did you meet any of her family?
I didn't meet her direct family, but I met a manager
and
I met her secretary.
Yeah.
And she was in a girl group called Lana Sisters, and I met one of the girls in the Lana Sisters, girls, the ladies in there. And I met one of her backing singers, Simon. He came along to my Dusty show, actually.
Yeah.
And then we do every... In fact, it's just gone her birthday. She would have been 87, 16th April.
So when did she die?
She died in 1999.
So she wasn't that old then, was she?
No, she was 59.
Wow. Mm. Was it cancer? I remember reading something.
Yeah, it was breast cancer.
Yeah, wow.
So, But she, I mean, complex character, but that's probably why her voice was so wonderful. Mm. You know, just so much soul, so much emotion, you know.
Yeah.
So I really did have to study her. You know, you couldn't just go in there and, you know, rattle off of her songs, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They were so different. You
and
know.
So then you became the tribute act.
Yeah, I was the first one to do it, and we sold out tour. And we wanted to continue it, so we decided to sort of... I did an album in Jim Davidson's studio, and that was produced by a guy who was in... I might get this wrong, Dave might tell me off. It was in Wizard, but he also was along with my husband doing Buddy musical as well. So we're all big, heavy-duty people.
Yeah.
And I did the album... in Jim's studio, and that was a big success, you know. So we wanted to continue it, you know. We started having a massive following, and so we took it on ourselves and did the production, changed it around a bit because I did my homework. I knew when we did the first tour, which Jim produced and everything else, Jim Davidson is one of these people that loves massive production. everything's got, you know, 3 million lights, and yeah. it's all about that, you know. And it wasn't about that. It was about Dusty, you yeah. know. So I wanted to approach it in a different way. And he also put a comedian on before the main Dusty part that we did. And that wasn't
no,
the style.
It doesn't feel no, like it
No, was it wasn't right. Off. So we got rattled for that bit, you know, yeah. by the press. So we wanted to take it on ourselves, and then it became huge, absolutely huge. It's been going on for years and years and years, you know, and I've done a lot of television for it. I did Jim Davison Presents TV. And, you know, then I did launched one of the books on Gloria Hunniford's show, Open House.
Oh, yeah, I remember
did that. And so it went on and on and yeah, on, and yeah. I did... dance versions of all Dusty songs, which got to number Brilliant. One in Europe, and it was all those sort of things. So I mean, I've got a lot to be thankful to Dusty for,
yeah.
you know. And it was my friend really who said that I looked like her, and so you know, it went from there really.
Brilliant.
Bit of luck.
Did you ever appear on Top of the Pops?
Only with Spandau Ballet.
Oh, with Spandau.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you got footage of that song?
Oh, I don't know where it is now.
Oh, that'd
you know.
Be interesting.
Yeah,
to
I don't yeah. know. There's lots of things, you know. I sort of look back and think, oh, I'd like to. But
have you ever written a book about your life? Have you thought
no,
about doing
it? I have thought about it. Yeah. Jointly with my husband, I think, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, because obviously, like, Karen's husband is in the was in the music industry, but as a sound engineer, is that
yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
So I think we might need to. Get him in here one day to have a little chat about his time.
Well, he's got proper rock and roll stories.
Oh, exciting.
I'm lightweight, really, you know. Opera and Dusty and Barbara, you know.
You know, and then let's move on to Barbara, because when I read your bio, it was like Barbara Streisand actually sanctioned you as someone.
Yeah, because what happened again, Barbara's a massive gay icon.
Yeah.
You know? But Barbara's been my favourite singer since I was a kid. My dad was a massive fan of Barbara Streisand, so I've listened to Barbara Streisand all my life. It's in
yeah,
my head.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
the songs. I just love her, absolutely love her. And I wanted to do a tour of Barbara Streisand songs and things like that. And there's a Barbara Mag that comes out every year, which she can... You know, gives her consent
yeah.
to. And she allowed all my tour dates to go in it.
Have so you ever met her?
No.
Oh,
no.
Wow.
I haven't met her. No. No.
Yeah.
But that was a real coup, you know.
So. That, well, that is. That's like the green card. That's like
it is
the big
kind
tick
of, isn't it?
Saying,
yeah, that's what I like to think anyway.
Oh, definitely. Because. Otherwise, she wouldn't. She doesn't need to, does she? She doesn't.
No,
need to
no. Someone. I mean, it's a big thing. I mean, you know, she, behind the scenes, you know, I should imagine there's a lot going on. You know, so to actually get those tour dates
yeah.
in that mag is.
Yeah, yeah.
I still got it. I look at it every now and then and think.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh, I would definitely. So, how long have you been in Spain now?
Well, we bought a house in 2003,
yeah.
but obviously we're touring. It was kind of like a holiday home, really.
Yeah.
We never had any time to do anything. You'd arrive over here, then you'd have to clean up with all the dust,
yes,
like you do.
Yes.
And then by that time, it's like you've got to pack away again and go back, you know. So we kind of put a deadline on it when things slowed down, you know. The touring, it's not so easy to do.
Yeah.
Now the tours, you can't combine them all into kind of a compact 2 months. They're spread out, you know,
yeah.
because they don't have the venues, and, you know, everybody's clamouring to get theatre dates or whatever, and the venues, as I said, aren't there anymore. So we decided that was it. We'd start slowing down, mm. getting to a certain age, and, you know, just do the things that we want to do, keep our hand in.
How long ago was that?
And that was about 2013, 14, something
okay,
like
so
that.
About
so, yeah.
10,
so 10, 12 years yeah, or something
yeah.
like that, yeah.
So did you, well, obviously you haven't slowed down.
No.
But did you slow down for a little period of time and then suddenly the bug got you?
Well, we did end up going back and doing tours mm. still, you know, but our main home is here now,
yeah.
you know. And also we got recording studios, so we do a lot of session stuff down the line. Everything's down the line now, isn't it? You
right.
know,
yeah, of course.
You can sit
of
there
course.
In your PJs, you know,
yes.
and sing.
But, and I guess that's one of the beauties of things changing in the industry, because, yeah. you, as you say, a lot of things have changed not for the good.
Yeah.
But this is kind of like a bit of a beauty for you guys, because you can work from, as you say, your pyjamas at home in Spain.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's lovely. It is lovely. But sometimes you have to discipline yourself, really. You know, you do actually want to dress up and, you know, and go out and do a show. You know, that's the whole importance of it all, you know. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, isn't it, really? You know, I prefer, for me, I'm old-fashioned. I preferred the older days, you know.
Yeah.
Just the opportunities. And you meet, it got more and more lonely, really, because you'd end up not having a band, you know, because they'll cut backs and everything else. So you go there and be backing tracks. So, and then, you know, the variety shows aren't there.
No.
So you wouldn't meet anybody. You wouldn't work with anybody else.
So
you could be on the road on your own.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it can a bit, really, you know.
So tell us about now, because you will be touring again soon.
Well,
you?
The touring is maybe not the right word. It's kind of, you know, odd gigs here, there and everywhere, the odd cruise and different pieces, things like that, you know, hotels, you know.
Cruise as well.
Oh, I've done loads of cruises.
Wow.
Loads of cruises, yeah. I mean, they're great, but sometimes you feel like, oh, because I'm one of those people like working, and sometimes you join a cruise ship, they'll fly you in, you'll join a cruise ship, have two or three days at sea, and then you do your show, and then they'll fly you back. And I'm itching because I'm thinking, I'm just doing one show, you know, I want to get on, you know.
Wow.
But having said that, I mean, wonderful. I mean, the QE2 was wonderful. Marvin Hamlisch, songwriter, was on one of my cruises that I did. And I mean, you know, superstar songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's all those opportunities, the people you meet and stuff, and working with bands, which they did. But even they were changing, because I kind of shot myself in the foot as well, because I did a lot of session work for the tracks to go on the cruise ships. So it got to a point where sometimes
they didn't need you.
No. Well, I'd be sitting there, I'd be walking along the corridor or something. I could hear myself singing while the floor show's on, so they don't want me, do they, when my voice is already being used. So it has changed, lack of money, funding. I mean, it's in every industry, isn't it, really, you know.
So, and as the industry gets, well, it gets, there's more technology involved, which means that anybody who's got a sound recording equipment can do it. I'm not saying that they'll be any good, but then there's more competition.
Yeah,
I
think so. I mean, this AI thing.
Yeah,
you know,
that's scary.
I mean, that is frightening. Yeah. It is frightening.
I think we should control AI. AI shouldn't control us.
Mm,
and a lot of the things that I see and read, it's like, it's quite scary how it seems to be pushing its way into everyday life.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, I don't regret any of it. I love it. I love the fact that at my prime, I was at the best time for showbiz, if you want to call it that, showbiz.
Yeah.
It just has a different feel about it now. And I just think, you know, as long as people keep supporting live music, you know,
absolutely,
it'll keep going. But they really do need people to go along and support it.
Yeah.
So the finances are there to pay these talented young people.
Yeah. But I was hearing, like, it's like going to the theatre, because my passion is theatre.
Mm.
But going to the theatre in London, you're looking at the cheapest ticket is over £100.
Yeah.
And that's not even for a good seat.
No,
so
that's
I'm
right.
presuming that in the music industry. So it's almost like it becomes like it cuts off for the ordinary
folk. It's not accessible, is
it?
Yeah,
it's not. No, it's more sort of, you kind of think it's elitist now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because it's so expensive.
It is really expensive. I mean, I've been lucky that most of my career, touring has been theatres, so I've been in hundreds of wonderful theatres.
Yeah.
But of course they all start going into disrepair. Then you've got all the legalities. You've got, you know, public liability insurance, PRS, you know, everything else. You know, that you've had to fight. And nowadays, I mean, I used to have an equity card. I had to have an equity card to work in these places. But that's gone.
No. That's what it means. Anyone can just
Yeah.
do it.
So people don't have the hunger, or they don't work so hard, you know, because they don't have to get an equity card. They don't have to prove themselves so much. I mean, I was lucky because I've been in the right place a lot of the time. Maybe I could have gone further. I don't know, but I've got
but
a
you
wonderful
have
husband.
No, so
I'm lucky. No, no, I'm lucky, and I've done. Not done a proper job, really. That's what my parents used to say.
Well, no, because we were just before we started talking live, we were talking about like retiring. Now, the thing is, you only retire from something, I guess, if you haven't got a passion for it. And what you do is more of a vocation than like a drudgery. You know?
Yeah. I love singing. I love music. Yeah. You know, if I go in a restaurant and there's no music playing, it's noise to me because it's so quiet. Do you know what I mean? I've just got to have music around me. Dave, my husband's the same, you know. It's just music's everything.
That's
you
fantastic.
Know it really is brilliant, and you know, it's my world, so have that taken away, no, just can't do it, you know.
So I'm going to be a bit cheeky here now and ask you if you've got any stories that you can tell us about.
Okay.
That is broadcastable. The others you can tell me when we're off air.
I'll tell you what, I had a wardrobe malfunction, and it was when I was working with Gene Pitney. Lovely, lovely man. It was at the Circus Tavern, which I'm sure a lot of people would know. Big, big cabaret club, and I was resident there a lot. So I was working with, I think it was about an 8 or 9-piece band, and my mother had bought me this beautiful dress, which was very clingy, had a split up the back, and it had like a rope tied around the back, which you put down to the bottom of your back, tied it up. So you had to have good posture. My mistake was I didn't rehearse the dress before I did the show. And I was on for 25 minutes. And because I tied it up secure and everything like that, went on, started, did my show and everything else. And Gene Pitney was watching from the side. What I didn't realise was that I tied it up so tight, the dress started to rise up and the cheeks of my bottom started to show from the split at the bottom of my dress. So the band were going, it's a very cheeky performance. So can you do an encore, please? But I was mortified. There were 2,500 people in the audience.
Wow. They all got mooned.
Yeah, they certainly did. Oh, God.
What about some of the people that you worked with? Were they like, did you work with any kind of real divas who...
Well, Freddie Starr stories that I can be broadcast. Freddie was very naughty, you know. I mean, I got on brilliant with Freddie Starr. But he was hard work. He was, you know, I mean, he was phenomenal. But there's one time when I was singing Run to You, the Whitney Houston song from Bodyguard. And I used to take the mickey with him and everything and sing it in a Cockney accent because I'm a Cockney and just make him laugh and everything else. But one day he decided to be cheeky and I'm singing, again, it was in like a 3,000-seater theatre. And as I'm singing Run to You, he came along and he got between my legs and lifted me up on his shoulders. And this was at Ipswich Theatre there, Regent. And the stage was about, I don't know, it must have been about 6 foot high or something like that. It was like ridiculous, you know, so.
Did you carry on singing?
I carried on. But I mean, he could have killed me really thinking about it. But yeah, he did that.
He always struck me as somebody who didn't really care. He would just push the boundaries.
Oh, he did a terrible thing one time. We were down in Torquay. And I had my dancers with me, and we were waiting to go on stage. And a couple of the girls are going, oh, my mum and dad are in today. So excited, they've never seen me. Freddie Starr show, you know, blah, 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 blah. And Freddie overheard it. So he just went, I want to cancel the dancers and didn't let them go on.
No.
It's a terrible thing to do, isn't it?
That's really
mean. Yeah, wicked, wicked.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he did something comedic.
No,
that's really horrible.
That's how he could be. He could be
a bit schizo psycho.
A genius on one hand, and then wicked, you know.
Oh my goodness!
Oh no, I felt so bad for the girls. You know, they were mortified. The parents were in. You know, and they didn't go on. So you know, that's the power they had.
Years
ago.
Absolutely. And so. When you did Shirley Bassey, did you tour doing her, or
one-off? That was at the Circus Tavern again. She was there, and we were in the floor show before her.
Okay.
Quite demanding.
Oh, I can imagine.
Diva. Pink toilet.
Really?
But if you're Shirley Bassey, you can have a pink toilet, can't you?
I just don't get it. I don't get people's attitudes.
I think some people just love being divas like that, though, don't they? I think Mariah Carey is one of the biggest
divas.
Yeah,
I've heard she is. And I've heard stories about certain people asking for certain things in their dressing room.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever do that?
No. Just have be things like on the rider, we'd be very, you know, some towels or, you know, whatever. Some people have like crates of vodka or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
you know.
Bottles of champagne.
Yeah. I think Chaz and Dave used to have crates of beer or something like that, things like that. But, you know, but most of them were, I mean, when I toured with Jethro, I don't think he knows Jethro, Cornish comic. It was huge.
Yeah.
He was absolutely huge. But one of those people you either know him or you don't, you know. But I mean, he had this old Adidas bag that lasted, it was like 600 years old, all, you know, frayed and everything else. And he'd go in there, he wouldn't ask for anything but water and that's it, you know. And, you know, he was pulling them in, he was selling out and everything else.
What about Billy Connolly? Because he, when I see him interviewed, I mean, he's quite ill now, but in the past, watching him be interviewed, he always seemed like very down to earth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, Circus Tavern. Because all the greats went there, you know. Bob Wheatley could pull them in. And the other place was Usk in Wales, was another place where, like, Cliff Richard came along and everything. Because the owners of the club were friends with a lot of these stars, you know. So they came in and some ways did them a favour. So they come along and do a one-off, knowing they'd make some money for the club, and then they go on tour. So it was nearly like a build-up or whatever, you know.
And it was sort of like a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah, there
well.
Was kind of a lot of that, I feel, you know, that I heard about, you know. And I know Cliff Richard was very kind to George Sava from Usk in Wales and used to do shows there. And Jack Jones was another one. You know, massive names, but they would just do that, and it was they wanted these clubs to continue
because you know it was a venue for them
absolutely
showcase their talents
and they were
well.
Open every day of the week the week, you know, so and that's another thing that's changed, they're all gone pretty much, you know.
You say, because live music isn't, you know, we've got all the technology and sometimes technology can be fantastic, but it will never take away from the live performances, in my opinion, as well. It's like theatre as well.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You want that fear, don't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
You want the fear of remembering your lines or remembering your songs. Or, you know, you need that adrenaline, don't you? Instead of, you know, switching on to automatic, you just want that energy.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's I love singing. I absolutely love singing. I still put myself through the ringer and learn new stuff. Just to keep my brain going
and things like that.
And, you know,
brilliant.
So
when are you off now to do your first?
Well, we're doing some shows in the UK, doing some of those in a couple of months' time.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, doing that and doing some hotels, doing a couple of theatres. So that's all coming up.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and doing session work at home.
Yeah.
So, and doing a few bits here as well.
That's amazing. Well, Karen, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, pleasure.
There's so much more I want to ask you and talk about, but we have, well, we've gone way over our time.
Oh, sorry.
So I'm going to say goodbye to you by playing one of your favourite Barbra Streisand tracks, and it is The Way We Were. Thank you, Karen Noble.
Thank you.